Well, good morning. My name is Ben. I'm the lead pastor here at CORE. And I don't know about you guys, but every time we sing that song, Highlands, for me, it's this challenge, almost this conviction. That am I praising God because of what he's doing for me or because of who he is? And am I capable in the midst of whatever my circumstances are of praising God in the highlands or praising God in the heartache? And my hope is that for many of you, the songs that we sing resonate in your lives, in your story, and challenge you. But maybe this morning you walked into this place and you find it to be a struggle to engage and to sing some of those words that you see coming up on the screen and that Krista is leading us in for the very reason that we are doing this particular series. You see, this morning we are so incredibly excited that you're here with us, whether you're here in person or checking us out online, as we dive into this brand new series that we are calling Doubting God. And over the course of the next 6 weeks, we're going to be addressing this tension that exists in every single one of us. For some of us, it exists right here, right now, in our present circumstances and the thoughts that we're presently sifting through. And for others of us, when we get honest enough, as we look back across our past, we recognize that there are plenty of moments in our lives in which we have struggled with doubts and questions. And we acknowledged this tension last week. That for many of us, we walk into this place wrestling with questions of whether or not this whole thing is worth it and really applies to my life, this relationship with Jesus, this Christianity thing, this church thing, and whether all of this is really real or not. And as we wrestle with all of those things, for every single one of us, as the questions and doubts rise to the surface in our lives in the midst of our circumstances, every single one of us at some point in our lives have asked the questions of, is God really there? Does God really care? And is God really capable? And we're all here because at some point in our lives, we've all began to ask questions and lean into the doubts we've experienced in our lives around this one central truth that we feel as if we're supposed to believe. That God is who he says he is and will do what he's promised to do. That God really loves me the way that he's promised to love me. And yet when we find ourselves face to face with the questions and the doubts in our faith and in our life, oftentimes we find ourselves bumping into this phrase or this term that's risen in popularity over the course of the last several years. It's a phrase that for some of us brings a negative connotation or a misunderstanding or at least the uncertainty of the weight of what this word really means. You see, over the course of the last several years, many of us have come face to face with this term, deconstruction of faith. And as we've heard that word, for many of us, we've struggled with what that really looks like or what that really means or how it manifests itself into people's lives who talk about going through a deconstruction of their faith. Maybe you've encountered it in the life of a friend who is journeying through that. Or maybe it's one of your kids who's growing up and becoming an adult of their own and beginning to process through their own faith. Or maybe that is something that you find yourself presently walking through. And it's a phrase that over time has become directly correlated with this thought of when we deconstruct our faith, it means that we're walking away from our faith. And yet what I want us to begin to understand about this particular phrase and the doubt and the questions that come along with it is this, is that while deconstructing our faith may eventually lead to us walking away from our faith, in its truest definition, deconstructing our faith does not have to lead us to a place in which we run from God or we run from our faith or we run from the local church. What if there was a healthier and more productive way to deconstruct or assess or begin to lean into our doubts and our questions that led us someplace better than what we presently find ourselves in? But we'll get to that in a second. You see, all of us find ourselves in this place in which we evaluate and ask questions about our lives and our faith and who God is and if he is who he says he is because of this one word, doubt. That in our lives, we experience moments or we walk through circumstances or we look out into our world and we see things that make doubts rise to the surface. Maybe we've heard someone say something that gave us pause when it came to something that we believed. And what I want you to hear and what I want you to know is this, is that in your life, if you find yourself presently struggling with doubts and questions around circumstances that you're walking through or struggles that you're up against or something that someone said that gave you pause to something that you presently believe, what I want you to hear is this, is that if you find yourself up against doubts and questions, man, if I would have experienced what you experienced, saw what you saw, heard what you heard, I want to get ridiculously transparent in saying I'd probably be struggling with the same doubts and questions that you're struggling with. That I'd be asking those same questions and trying to process through those same struggles as what you are. You see, that doubt that rises up in us creates this tension, this issue inside of us. That as we experience doubt in our lives, somewhere along the way, we've bought into this common misconception. Oftentimes, this common misconception that the church has fed in our lives or in our world. And it's this, that as we experience doubt in our lives, the myth that we've begun to believe is that doubt is bad. Is that doubt is all bad and all negative in our lives. And oftentimes as we experience doubt, the reason why we feel as if doubt is all bad is because there is this nagging feeling deep inside of us that seems to pair itself with doubt every time we experience doubts and questions when it comes to our life and our faith. And that feeling, at least to me, feels a whole lot like shame. And as I experience shame in my life from the doubts and the questions that are rising up inside of me, it forces me into a corner in which I've been led to believe, and maybe you've been led to believe, there are but two options to choose when you experience doubts and questions in your life as it pertains to God, as it pertains to faith, as it pertains to Christianity, as it pertains to the church. Option number one is this. As that feeling of shame and embarrassment enters into my life because of my doubts and my questions, because it makes me feel as if I am bad, my option is to hide those things, to make sure that no one ever sees those things, to not address them and to act as if they're not there. Or option number two, that if I don't want to look at myself as bad because of the doubts and the questions, then the only other option I have is to associate the thing that I doubt to be bad. And in associating that thing to be bad, my second option is to simply run away from that thing that I'm doubting or questioning in my life. You see, every single one of us have felt as if in those moments where we doubt and question, we either need to hide our doubts or we need to run away from the thing that in which we are doubting. But what if I told you that there was a third option? A third option that if we were courageous enough to lean into this option in the midst of our doubts, in the midst of our questions, in the midst of our uncertainties, could actually move us into a better place, could actually make us healthier, and could actually grow us out the other side. And that third option is something we come across in the life of one of Jesus' first followers, a guy by the name of Peter. If you've never heard the story of Peter, Peter is best described as a go, set, ready kind of guy. Peter sees something that he wants to say or he wants to do, and he just does it. There's not a whole lot of preparation that goes into it. He just jumps in, and he goes for it, and then he figures out how to clean up the mess later. And time after time, how that plays out in Peter's life is this. Is that because Peter acts as a go, set, ready kind of guy, he finds himself in plenty of moments in which his doubts and his missteps are on full display for the people around him. In which all of these questions and all of these mistakes seem to be highlighted, maybe more than any of other of Jesus' first followers. And we see one of those such instances happening in an account we find by one of Jesus' other disciples, a guy by the name of Matthew. And Matthew tells us this story that happens directly after Jesus. He was out in the countryside and he was doing all of these miraculous things. He was healing people who had been sick for years and who had these deformities, hadn't been able to walk, hadn't been able to see, hadn't been able to hear. And Jesus was just out in the countryside. He was like Oprah, y'all. It was like, you get to see and you get to hear and you get to walk. And you can imagine, right, people just coming to him all day and the disciples trying to sift through all of these people and do the whole relational thing. And by the end of the day, they are just absolutely exhausted. And so Jesus gives the disciples this instruction. I want you to hop in the boat, and I want you to sail across the lake to the other side to escape the crowd of people so that we can rest. And you guys go, and I'll meet you on the other side later. And so they find themselves, they've been at this all day, it's now nighttime, it's completely dark out, and they find themselves sailing in their boat across this lake. And as they're sailing across the lake, they see this figure coming towards them on the lake, walking on the water. And they begin to ask the question, like, is it a ghost? What is this coming at us? And as they begin to ask the question, Jesus hollers out, "It is I." And they're like, oh, that's Jesus. That's our teacher. That's our rabbi. And in the most Peter way possible, the go, set, ready kind of life, Peter decides, I'm going to do something that no one else has ever done before. And I'm going to step out there and I'm just going to say what's on my mind without actually thinking through it or preparing for it. And in this very moment, we pick up the story in Matthew chapter 14, starting in verse 28. It continues like this. Then Peter called to him, meaning Jesus, Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you walking on the water. Yes, come, Jesus said. So Peter went over the side of the boat and walked on the water toward Jesus. But when he saw the strong wind and the waves, he was terrified and began to sink. Save me, Lord, he shouted. Jesus immediately reached out and grabbed him. You have so little faith, Jesus said. Why did you doubt me? Now, if you're anything like me, you look at the multiple accounts of the life of this guy named Peter, and you see the mistakes and the moments where he continues to stick his foot in his mouth. And oftentimes, if you're anything like me, you look at Peter and you're like, Peter, come on, dude. Like, what is wrong with you? And yet, when I read this story, what I begin to recognize is this. Peter gets a bad rap, y'all. Like, we look at this story and we focus in on the end of the story where Peter's doubts and his concentration on the wind and the waves, the circumstances around him takes over and the fear begins to set in. And we see that mistake and that misstep. But oftentimes what we miss, and this is why I believe with all of my heart that Peter gets a bad rap, y'all. There were 11 other jokers on that boat who didn't even bother to swing their legs out over the side. Peter did something in walking on water that no other human in the history of earth has ever done before. And y'all, let me just give you a side message in a minute here. Don't let anybody convince you that you are less than because you are experiencing doubts and questions in the middle of taking risks that nobody else is willing to take. Y'all okay? Don't let anybody convince you that you are less than because you experience doubts and questions in the middle of taking risks that nobody else is willing to take. That's what we see Peter encountering in this moment. But here we find Peter experiencing this doubt and really, quite frankly, experiencing this doubt in the most embarrassing way possible. He's experiencing doubt face to face with the very guy that he is doubting. And you can imagine, right, like the embarrassment and the shame that Peter is feeling. He's probably sitting there like when they crawl back in the boat and he's waiting for Jesus to look at him and like, hey, Peter, when we get to shore, just so you know, we've now been reduced to 11. Because what you just did and the doubt you just showed and the uncertainty that you just lived out, that's not welcome here. You see, what Peter was probably expecting is what maybe you felt like when you've walked into church before, and that is this. If you doubt, you're out. If you doubt, there's no place for you here. And so you better just be a good Christian and act as if there is no doubt or find a way to live a perfect life and actually have no doubt. And if you're anything like me, you're like, come on, that's just not possible. I mean, it's possible to hide it, but is that actually the healthy option? You see, oftentimes as we experience doubt in our lives around that mindset that oftentimes we've created as the church, what it leads to is this feeling of isolation, am I right? While everybody else around us is hiding it, we feel as if I'm the only one that's experiencing this doubt. I'm the only one that's struggling with these questions. And as we experience isolation, right, oftentimes we don't stay anywhere where we feel alone very long. And yet, can I just say this? That right now, if you would do me the favor of looking to your left and then to your right, somewhere down your row, you would find two people who have experienced doubts and questions in their life. You are not alone. Regardless of whether they are mature enough to admit that they've experienced doubts and questions or not, is beside the fact that they have, that we all have, that I have. The very dude that they allow to walk up here on stage every single week has struggled with doubts and questions littered throughout my past, my present, in the midst of my circumstances, my struggles. Is God really there? Does God really care? What is God doing in all of this? I've struggled with those exact same questions in my life. But in light of that truth, that we've all experienced doubt, that we've all struggled with questions, what we can all find hope in is this truth. Your doubts don't disqualify your faith. Your doubts don't disqualify your faith. And that truth isn't just for those of us who walked into this room presently struggling with doubt and questions. Sure, it's certainly for you to provide hope. But that truth is also for those of us sitting in this room who may not be presently struggling with doubt or questions, but are called as Christ followers to provide a safe place that people can walk into and feel comfortable expressing those doubts, those questions. A place that's free of judgment and the negative lies that have often been associated with things like doubts and questions. Why? Because that is the Christ-honoring thing to do. It is part of our unique mission. But secondly, why? Because we become people who are mature enough to look back on our past and to recognize that there have been seasons of my life in which I have walked through doubt and questions, and I needed someone to create a safe place for me and to stand in the gap for me. And maybe even more mature than that, I recognize that in my future, because I am broken and imperfect, there will be moments in my future in which I walk through seasons of doubt and questions, and I will need someone to have a safe place for me and stand in the gap for me in those moments. That this truth is for those of us who have been called to reach out into our world, to allow people to understand the doubts and questions and uncertainties you have. Don't disqualify your faith. Man, you are welcome here, and this is a safe place to confront those things. You see, we're called to create an environment where this very truth can come to life in people's stories. That doubt doesn't have to be the enemy of faith. That doubt can actually be an invitation to deeper faith, a way for us to see Jesus for who he really is, to strip away all of the filters and to see God's love for us and the way he intended us to see it. And you see, at the very end of this story, Jesus poses this question to Peter. Peter, why did you doubt me? In confession for you, I've read this story probably over 1,000 times in my life. And yet what I also have to confess is this, is that almost every single time I have read this story, in that very last question, the way in which I've read that question is it's as if Jesus was asking that question in a condescending, judgmental way. Like, Peter, why are you such an idiot? Why are you so stupid, Peter? Those doubts were so unfounded. I just don't get you, Peter. You're out. And yet, as I've reassessed this passage and take a deeper look at who Jesus is and his love for us, what I've began to discover is, what if I've been reading that question all wrong all along? What if this question that Jesus asked wasn't an accusation? What if it was an invitation? An invitation to discover something in ourselves. An invitation to discussion. An invitation to dialogue. An invitation for us to dig deeper. It was as if in that moment, Jesus stood before Peter and he asked this question, not as a condescending one, not as a judgmental one, not in a way to put Peter down, but in a way for them to begin to process through what Peter was feeling and what he had just walked through, the doubts and the questions that he had had. It was as if Jesus wanted to have this conversation in order for him and Peter to walk back this journey, to begin to remember the ways in which God had proved to be faithful in the midst of all the doubts of his past. Peter, why do you doubt? And as they processed through this conversation, I can just imagine Jesus taking Peter back through the moments of doubt that they had encountered and the moments in which Jesus had stood in the gap for him. Peter, you remember the fishes and the loaves? That day on that countryside when 5,000 people had been gathered there all day, and then I posed that question to the 12 of you that seemed absolutely ludicrous, and you all looked at me as if I were crazy. That when the crowd had gotten hungry, I posed the question, what if we fed them all? You remember when you all pushed back and the doubts began to close in and you were like, you don't realize that would take years of wages for us to be able to afford to do one meal for all of these people. There's no possible way. And yet with those few loaves and those couple of fishes, you remember what happened? Everyone ate until they were full. And then in order for you to take home a piece of how I come through in the midst of your doubts and your questions, I had a to-go baggie, 12 of them, one for each of y'all. For you guys to take home with you and remember this day by. Peter, you remember the day when I asked you to follow me for the first time? You've been out fishing all night and you hadn't caught a thing. And then there was this stranger from the beach who yelled out to you to cast your net on the other side of the boat as if you weren't a professional fisherman and you hadn't tried that already. And you looked at me as if I were crazy, and Peter, you probably wanted to punch me in the face, but you did it anyways. And when you dropped that net over the other side of the boat, there were more fish in the net than what you could haul into your boat. Peter, you remember the day when we went to the wedding reception? And the hosts were so embarrassed because they had all of these guests that were expecting the best party of the year, and then they ran out of wine. And they didn't know where to turn or what to do. There was only water that was left. And I went into the back room and I turned the water into wine, so much so that they began to question. This isn't the way parties are supposed to function. You save the best wine for last. You're supposed to bring the best wine out first, but you save the best for last for us. What incredible host you are. Peter, do you remember the people who couldn't see? Now can see? The people who couldn't hear, that now can hear. The people who couldn't walk, who now can walk. You see, what if Jesus wasn't posing this question to chastise Peter, but to simply enter into a conversation with Peter? Why do you doubt? And what if a God who knows you best and still loves you most ask you that exact same question? Why do you doubt? Maybe for you, you walked into this room with doubts and questions. They're surrounded on this reality that when you've tried to pick up this book before, you opened it up and you read an account one place and then you turned to a completely different place and it seemed like those two things seemed to be in stark contradiction of one another and you just can't justify how there could be two different things in this one account of who God is. Or maybe for you, there's this contradiction that exists between a God who's in control and the scientific facts that the world is trying to teach you and show you. And there seems to be a contradiction between those two things that just don't add up. And I don't know how to justify believing in God and yet also hanging on to science. Maybe for you, the doubts and the questions that you have in your life are completely based upon this question. How can a good God allow such bad things to happen? You look out into our world and you wrestle with the mess in light of a God who's supposed to love me, supposed to love us. How could a good God allow genocide? How could a good God allow wars like the war we're presently seeing in Ukraine? How could a good God allow oppression and slavery to be a part of our world and people's stories? How could a good God allow infants to die every single day from hunger? How could a good God allow people to die from the absence of clean drinking water in their lives? How could a good God allow little girls to be trafficked in our world? How could a good God allow such bad things, such hurt and messed up stuff to happen in our world? Or maybe for you, you don't even have to look out into our world. Maybe for you, the question simply centers on, how could a good God who's supposed to love me let me walk through this? How could he allow me to walk through this kind of suffering? How could a God who loves me allow me to walk through cancer? Allow me to walk through the difficulty of being told that you'll never have children. Or to get my hopes up that we were going to have a child, then to walk through miscarriage. How can a God who loves me allow me to go through such financial hardship, to go through a layoff, to go through the dashing of my hopes and dreams and the way in which my life seemed destined to go? How can a good God allow me to walk through divorce? How can a good God allow me to walk through a spouse who cared for me once and was living up to their promise and their covenant of marriage, and then another day it seemed like everything just crumbled out beneath of us? How could a good God allow me to walk through broken relationships and feeling as if I've been stabbed in the back by one of my closest friends? How could a good God allow that to happen to me? And all of these doubts and all of this uncertainty and all of these questions begin to rise to the surface. Or maybe for you, it's a wound that seems as if it can never be resolved. That you look back in your past and there are stories a physical hurt and abuse, or emotional hurt and abuse, that feel as if they're always there, always lingering over you, always haunting you, that you just can't seem to shake. Or maybe it's simply that everything you see in the Bible never seems to be how the church acts, never seems to be how the church treats you or how the church treats the world around you. And there are all of these things in your life that raise up all of these doubts and all of these questions. And you've been forced to believe that you only have two options, to either hide those doubts or to run away from the things that you doubt. But what if those doubts were things that Jesus was inviting you to lean into? Things that he was inviting you to lean into, not things that he intended to sink you. Because the hope that I cling to with every fiber of my being, what I believe with all of my heart, is that we have a God who is not in the business of allowing people to sink. And I see it firsthand right here in this real life account of Peter. Because in the midst of Peter's doubts and questions, in the midst of his fear, in the midst of him taking his eyes off of Jesus and focusing on the circumstances around him and the wind and the waves, you know what Jesus didn't say? Peter, it's what you deserve. If you just would have kept your eyes on me, everything would have been fine, but look where you got yourself now. Good luck getting yourself out of that one. You know what Jesus did in that moment? He reached right smack dab into the middle of Peter's doubts. Right smack dab into the middle of our messes. He reaches time and time again with this promise to lift us up, with this promise to allow us to talk about and lean into and face head on all doubts and uncertainties and fears and questions that we face in all lives as we walk through difficult moments. See, doubt doesn't have to incite panic in our lives. Doubt could most likely be an opportunity for us to have a conversation. It can be an opportunity to process, a time for us to dialogue. You see, oftentimes we look at deconstruction as a bad thing, but in its true meaning, deconstruction can actually be a healthy option if we use it correctly. Why? Let me ask you this. If you're sitting in this room and you're a Christ follower, I want to challenge you to be courageous enough to lean in for just a minute. My question is this. For all the values and beliefs that you have in your life, all of those values and beliefs are 100% purely based upon this. Yes? Probably not. And I get it, this might be a y'all okay moment. There may be some bubble bursting happening. See, the truth of the matter for Ben Carver, I can speak for myself, is that the values and beliefs that I possess, it might be my desire for them to be purely and solely based upon God's word, God's instruction manual for my life, but what I recognize about myself is that I carry my own filters to the table. That oftentimes, hang on for just a second, elders, hang in there with me. That oftentimes we partially base our values and beliefs off of what this word says, but then we also partially base it off of the filter of how our church teaches what this thing means. We partially base it off of God's word, and we partially base it upon what our parents believed about that book and about what Jesus said and about what they passed on to us about what this means and how it coincides with our lives and our decisions. We partially base it off of this book, but we also base our beliefs just a little bit on how we were raised or what we've experienced, what we've walked through, how we view life through our side of town or our socioeconomic standing. We process it through our present circumstances. And maybe every once in a while we process it through what helps us most in our present circumstances. Hello. We process oftentimes this through what aligns with our current political agenda, our present political standing. That it comes natural that every single one of us have filters that get factored into the mix. And those filters, as we move through life, have the ability to slowly distance us. From just seeing Jesus. From just following Jesus. And you see, Jesus was no stranger to this. Jesus was no stranger to this process of being able to evaluate and ask questions, to be able to strip back the things in our life that have gotten attached to our values and our beliefs. For us to get back to a place in which we just see Jesus, in which we just filter things through what Jesus asked us to do in following him. Don't believe me? In one of Jesus' most famous messages ever, the Sermon on the Mount, we see him going through this process 6 different times. He comes back to this phrase that he uses again and again and again. You've heard it said, ... but I say, ... Jesus was taking people through this deconstruction process in their life. to try to unhitch themselves from what is untrue and cling to simply what is true. Check this out. One such example we find in Matthew chapter 5, verse 43 says this. Right off the bat, he uses this phrase. You have heard the law that says, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say, love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. He does this six times. You have heard, but I said. You know what Jesus is trying to strip them back down to? This is the filter that you've carried to the table. This is the filter that you've heard the Pharisees and the Sadducees preach through and convince you of. But I want you to get back to a place in which you purely hear me, see me, process things through me and what I said. You see, deconstruction is simply the act of evaluating what is true and what is untrue. And when we become people who are capable of doing that, no matter where we stand in a relationship with Jesus, here's what happens, y'all. Growth happens. Growth happens in our life. Growth happens in our perspective. Growth happens in our faith. Growth happens in the way in which we model Jesus for our world. When we become people who are capable of letting go of what isn't true and holding on to what is true. Growth happens when we let go of what isn't true and we hang on to what is true. You see, it's much like when you find mold in your basement. You bring the expert in and you allow them to assess what's taking place. And when they come back and they give you the final report of the work that needs done, my guess is this. As they evaluate the unhealthy mold that is growing in your basement, the advice that they give you is not burn the house down and walk away, right? That's what they tell you if you have snakes in your basement, right? Their advice is let's take out what isn't healthy and leave the healthy stuff still there standing. That's the act of deconstruction. We take out what isn't true and we leave standing in place what is true, who Jesus really is. Your doubts don't have to be a source of shame, guilt, embarrassment, or even running away. They can be a kickstarter to healthy evaluation, to growth. Recently, I was able to sit down and have coffee and begin talking through with a friend of mine just some questions and doubts that were surfacing in his mind. And as I sat down with him and we began to have a conversation, we began to talk through these things and I began to share my heart and what I was processing and he got to hear my heart on why I was making certain decisions and why we as a church were making certain decisions. There was something that happened as we leaned into the doubt and we leaned into the questions and we entered into dialogue and discussion in those moments. Instead of just hiding it or running away from it, there was trust that began to grow. There was a growth in our relationship that now sets us up together as friends to be healthier as we move forward, but also separately to be healthier as we move forward because we processed and we conversed over those doubts, over those questions. And you see, for you and I, we're being invited into the same thing, that we don't have to run or hide from our doubts and our questions. See, undoubtedly, Peter was someone who experienced doubt and questions over and over and over again. As Jesus was coming to the end of his life, he sat his disciples down one afternoon and began to share with them that soon I'll go back into Jerusalem, and when I go back into Jerusalem, I'm going to be arrested. And upon being arrested, I'm going to go to a cross and I'm going to die for the world. And yet this plan that Jesus laid out was not the disciples' plan. It was not Peter's plan. This was not how the Messiah was supposed to play out. He was supposed to be a conquering king. He was supposed to trample the Roman government under his foot. He was supposed to come in and take care of all of this and elevate the nation of Israel again. That's our plan. That's how this is supposed to play out. And as Peter is saying, no, Jesus, you don't know what you're talking about. Come on. My plan is better. That's not how you're going to go, Jesus. Jesus looks Peter in the eye and he says this: "For you are merely seeing things from a human point of view, not from God's. You've attached all of these filters to what you want the Messiah to do and how you want the Messiah to look. But I wasn't sent to win by conquest. I was sent to win by sacrifice." And probably the moment of Peter's greatest doubt is when all of this started to come to fruition. When in that garden, the Roman soldiers approached and they arrested Jesus, like we talked about last week, and they drug him back into Jerusalem, right in the middle of that courtyard. Peter, in his go, set, ready approach, decided to follow at a distance, to keep tabs on what was happening to Jesus, their teacher, their Messiah. And as he followed at a distance through the courtyard, he was approached by three middle school girls. And they began to question him. "Aren't you one of them that we've seen with Jesus? Aren't you his follower? Aren't you one of his disciples?" And three times, Peter's doubts and fears rose to the surface, to where he denied even knowing Jesus at all. And yet what's so incredible is that in the aftermath of Peter's doubts and Peter's questions and Peter's missteps and Peter's mistakes, when he was willing to lean in, this was the very guy who God chose to speak at Pentecost. This was the very guy who God chose to build the local church on his back. "On this rock, I will build my church, and not even the gates of hell will be able to stop it." And undoubtedly, Peter, in experiencing from these three critical moments of doubt, went through three moments of sanctification. When Jesus had come back to life, he posed Peter three questions, and scholars debate that these three questions were meant to sort of restore Peter from these three moments of doubt. And he poses one question three times to Peter: "Peter, do you love me? Then feed my sheep." "Do you love me, Peter? Then feed my sheep." "Do you love me, Peter? Then feed my sheep." And in this very moment, Jesus was making this correlation that Peter would have known so well. He would have heard multiple times Jesus tell and retell this story of the good shepherd, of who he was and who he was calling his disciples to become once he left. This story of the good shepherd who would leave the 99 sheep to go after the one who was lost, to go after the one who was wandering, to go after the one who was experiencing doubts and questions and uncertainties. "And now, Peter, as I've come after you in the middle of your wandering, now I'm calling you to create a safe place where you go after the one in the midst of their questions, doubts, and uncertainties, to create a safe place in which they recognize that your doubts don't have to disqualify your faith. It can be a catalyst to deeper faith." And in looking back at this moment, Peter writes this in 1 Peter chapter 2. Verse 25, he uses this exact same picture in this moment. "For once, you all were like sheep who wandered away, but now you have turned to your shepherd, the guardian of your souls." It was this acknowledgement that all of us in all lives have found ourselves in moments of doubts and questions. And yet we have a good shepherd who reaches right into the middle of those doubts, who doesn't chastise us, who doesn't accuse us, but poses a question: "Why do you doubt?" as an invitation for discovery, for discussion, for dialogue, for us to see Jesus for who he really is. You got doubts? You're not alone. We all have them. But your doubts don't have to be something you hide in shame. They don't have to be something that causes you to run away. Those doubts don't disqualify your faith. They can be a catalyst to deeper faith. And this is a safe place for you to lean into those. Why? Because we have a God who's big enough for that. And because we have a God who actually invites that. Who wants relationship with you so badly and deeply that he says, bring whatever you got. I'm up for it. I'm here. I'm not running away. And so you don't have to either. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, sometimes there's no place to go but to simply say thank you. Thank you for being a big God who, in spite of what we've believed by our own volition or what we've heard growing up in the church, is not a God who chastises us in the middle of our doubt. Not a God who attaches shame and guilt and embarrassment to our doubt, but a God who invites us to a conversation. A God who invites us to lean into our doubts and our questions so that when we come out the other side, we can see who you really are clearer. By stripping away all of our filters and all the things we've attached along the way, and to just see you. God, I know for myself, I don't want all that other stuff. I just need you. And so in the midst of our questions, our doubts, may we find that this is a safe place. That if we're struggling with doubts, that this is a place that we can come and lean into those doubts and questions and seek answers. And if we're not, that we become Christ followers who are committed to creating a safe place that reflects who Jesus really is. God, help us. Give us courage. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.